Welcome to this podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners. I'm Dr. Sally Higginbottom, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Murukeji Ogorende, a GP in North Central London and a Medical Education Fellow at UCL. She's been leading a project on teaching medical students about dermatology and skin of colour. Welcome, Murukeji.
Hello, Sally. It's great to be here. Thank you.
So tell me a bit about this project. What problem is it aiming to address?
During my time with the UCL primary education team, some of the students raised some concerns about the fact that their dermatology teaching had more images of lighter skin tones, and they wanted to have more diverse images so that they could recognize what common skin conditions and complex skin conditions look like in darker skin tones. And so it was something that we were discussing in one of our weekly meetings and trying to brainstorm how we could help students in this area. And so the main aim of the project really is to diversify teaching in dermatology so that students, clinicians, nurses can recognize what normal skin looks like and what skin conditions look like in darker skin tones, where there has been quite a bit of a gap in the availability of educational resources in that group of patient population.
Why does the curriculum matter here? Why is it so important?
It's important because for us to offer the kind of care that we want to offer, for us to, you know that we're giving either standardized care, varied care, patient-centered care, it's important to know what we're doing. And unfortunately, the outcry has often been, especially with skin conditions, that doctors, nurses do not quite understand what black skin looks like or darker skin looks like, and also perhaps don't understand certain practices that occur within those communities. And if we don't understand what is going on, if we don't understand what the skin actually looks like, then there is often a bit of a delay in diagnosis. Sometimes we will end up trying out treatments that will not be palatable in certain patient groups. We might offend if we don't understand cultural practices. So there's quite a range of issues that arise when we start exploring the diversity that exists in dermatology, especially in skin of color. And so if we understand this better at a curriculum basis in medical school, then the hope is that we can then build on that knowledge as we do with all other medical conditions, from, you know, pathophysiology to physiology, and then ongoing to treatment and management.
So starting with the most obvious sign of many skin diseases, we'd usually look for erythema or redness. What does that look like in skin of darker colours?
So that is quite an interesting thing. You know, we normally talk about sort of the non-blanching rash, you know, pale and disappearing rashes. That doesn't often happen in skin of color. And it is just important to also say that when we talk about skin of color, sometimes people have an image in their head or in their minds of what skin of color looks like. It's just important to say that, you know, skin of color is not a monolith. So it does exist on a spectrum. And it is important to know that a mixed race person or a lighter skin, dark skin person might actually have patches that look pink or red. But if we're talking about much darker skin tones, perhaps like mine, then erythema might appear, or inflammation might appear, as hypopigmentation or hyperpigmentation. It might appear to look like something that might look like vitiligo, but actually isn't. It is a manifestation of inflammation. So those are things for us to bear in mind. But as we start seeing pictures of, okay, this is what this is and this is what this looks like, then we can then have a better understanding. And Sally, you and I were just talking about pattern recognition, which is a lot of what we do in primary care and as doctors. Once you've seen something once or twice, then it sort of sticks in your memory. And dermatology in skin of color is sort of the same. Once you've seen it a few times, then you're better able to manage it going forward, and you know what to expect. You kind of have an idea of what works and what might not work.
That's right. So if we think about something common like eczema, how might that appear differently in pigmented skin?
So eczema is quite an interesting one, especially because oftentimes in darker skin, the skin might often be a bit more dry, especially for those of us living in London, where the water is actually a lot harder than the rest of the country as well. That does tend to affect the skin. And in eczema as well, skin can look a lot darker. There can be quite a lot more pigmentation. There can be quite a lot of lichenification. So the skin can be quite thick as well in the consistency, a lot more rough in the consistency, as opposed to sort of the simple erythema, redness and bumps that we would normally expect as well. The look in eczema, even in mild eczema on darker skin, can actually look a lot worse than you would expect, even when it is mild eczema. So it's important to also understand what people have tried at home, especially in darker skin tones, because people are sometimes more aware that this is a common issue and might have tried quite a lot of emollients at home, which is quite common within certain communities of color, where it is normal to use emollients because the skin does have a tendency to be dry.
Let's think about psoriasis. The textbooks say that psoriasis produces salmon pink plaques, and it might do on me, but I'm guessing it wouldn't do on someone with an African heritage skin. Mm. What does psoriasis look like?
So psoriasis is quite an interesting one as well, isn't it? Because, you know, this standardized image of what psoriasis is supposed to look like, right? And so a lot of us, once we can close our eyes and we can imagine what psoriasis looks like, it's salmon, it's thick, it's scaly. But oftentimes in much darker skin tones, it actually can create quite purple patches on darker skin. And that can sometimes be slightly difficult to understand, because when you see that, it's what is that? I'm not quite sure what that is. But actually, it's a lot of times as well, the history can tell you what the diagnosis might be, but it does create some much deeper purplish kind of patches on darker skin, as opposed to that salmon-y type of image.
And thinking about serious skin conditions, we should always take a moment to consider skin cancers. And my understanding is that melanoma isn't related to UV exposure in deeply pigmented skin. Is that right?
Yeah, that is something that is actually quite interesting. And sometimes when we are screening for melanoma, when people present with mixed pigmented lesions, we screen them for their UV exposure. Where have you been? How frequently have you traveled to warmer climates? Have you used sunblock or sunscreen? But sometimes actually melanoma is not necessarily always related to UV exposure. And sometimes it can be related to X-ray exposure, scarring from burns, occupational exposure as well. So there's quite a wide range of things that can actually contribute to melanoma. And something as well in darker skin tones that we need to be more aware of is, because of the darkness of the skin tone, when you're looking at an image that could potentially be melanoma, your expectation of the diversity between what the lesion looks like and the skin tone looks like, it's just important to be sensitive that it might not have that significant contrasting image compared to a lighter skinned person. And then also the locations of melanocytic lesions in people of darker skin can often sometimes be different. And it's something that we should bear in mind as well.
So things like under the nail, subungual lesions and lesions on the feet and things are more common. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So lesions on the feet, fingernails, on the palms, in between toes, those are more common. And unfortunately, those are places that are normally hidden for most people. But once we have that in mind, then it makes us more sensitive to screen for it or to ask people about it or to just let them be aware that actually, you know, these things do happen. And I think sometimes even I myself, you know, melanoma was never something that I thought, I'm a dark skinned person, we don't get melanoma, but that's not actually true.
Yeah. Okay. And are there some conditions that are completely specific to skin of colour?
So yeah, so that is quite interesting. So something like traction alopecia is quite common within patients of darker skin. So that is quite important to be aware of, especially if people are presenting with that kind of pattern. So, you know, loss towards the front of the hair, which might have been as a result of tight braiding, tight cornrows, too tightly strapped on wigs as well. And this is where understanding cultural practices comes in, where you're able to then ask certain questions to somebody. So if you know that, you know, within this community, braids might be worn a lot more, wigs might be worn a lot more, and someone is presenting with alopecia, it might be an issue to say, when you go and get your hair done, how does it feel when it is being done? And a lot of trichologists within the dark skin community would often use that as a gauge to see if that is often the trigger of the problem. So how tight is it when your braider is doing your hair? How tight is it when your wig is on? And those are often clues to lead us towards that. other things as well within men, pseudofolliculitis barbae, that is something that is quite common with shaving and going to barbershops, especially if a man is not using his own set of clippers, that those are quite common as well. And obviously keloids are quite a significant issue within darker skin.
Absolutely. And clearly there's a lot to learn here. What resources are there for people to further their learning and learn a bit more with plenty of pictures?
So there's quite a lot out there now, and over the past year and this year, there's been quite a lot of outcry about diversity in lots of spaces, and that has triggered quite a lot of people to respond in an appropriate way, which is not about virtue signaling, which is actually quite important. So the Primary Care Dermatology Society does have a page on their website that does have a few links to certain resources that can be helpful. Our current project that we're working on at UCL is involving Malone Mukwende. So we got a grant from UCL to do some interviews with people within the Black community and influencers and patient advocates as well within that group to talk about their own experiences, their delays in diagnosis, and a few things that they have learned, the issues that they've had with steroid treatment and immunosuppressants as well in managing psoriasis. So Malone's resource is quite useful. It was called Mind the Gap, but now it's called blackandbrownskin.org.uk. And they're also planning to evolve as well to become more of a community-based group, offering patient support, which is so important in these patient groups as well.
So is there a way patients can contribute images or any other learning to these projects?
So yeah, so that's quite important. And the power of community cannot be overemphasized or even underestimated. The first thing would be talking within their communities, sharing their experiences as well, and seeking advice from the right sources. And sometimes patients might have tried different things or home remedies or herbs that can actually cause more damage. Women are sometimes known to mix things at home that can cause burns or even actually trigger off some significant dermatitis and hair loss. So it is important that patient groups are seeking help and advice from the right places. And if they feel that maybe their GP isn't so aware of the condition, then they can ask to be signposted to perhaps a dermatologist that has better understanding or a trichologist that works specifically within that group. And then also Mind the Gap, which is now Black and Brown Skin, has been doing quite a lot of work in trying to improve the image quality. And we've been working with them as well on that. And so the aim is, if you know any patients within this population that are willing to take anonymized pictures of their skin and upload for free, there's a consent form, and they just upload that onto blackandbrownskin.org. That would be really useful, because the more images that we all have to be able to help recognition, then the presentation to diagnosis time would be shortened quite significantly. So that's definitely something that patients can do. And so if you meet a patient in clinic or in surgery, or they submit a picture via e-consult, because that's what a lot of people are doing now with our current climate, then that might be someone that you might be able to reach out to and say, oh, would you be willing to do this? This is going to help and potentially also improve the quality of the care that they will receive going forward. So that's definitely a way to get patients involved as well. And oftentimes they do want to know that they are contributing to the care that they're receiving and to helping other people within the community.
That's great. A really positive way forward. Thank you very much for your time, Murunkeji. And thank you for listening to this podcast from the RCGP.
Thank you, Sally, for having me.